Everybody loves chalupas. Everybody loves them now. This is Rish Outfield, and you are listening to the Rish Outcast. I haven't done an episode in a while. I have so many banked. You know what I mean by banked, right? Where they're all recorded and some of them are already edited and they just sit. And I have to determine in what order to release them. And, you know, I don't want too many episodes to go by without a story. But at the same time, you know, I wouldn't want to do two stories that are too close together. That's a lot of twos, isn't it? I don't know. I shouldn't care. I think I've told you before that the two chief inspirations behind this solo podcast are Biggs' Ankle Cast, where he just got in the car and drove and spoke, which was still remarkably listenable. And that was kind of what I thought was interesting about it, is the sound quality was terrible, but hey. And then along those same lines, Cory Doctorow had a podcast that I listened to years ago. And yeah, don't take this the wrong way. He's got a million more listeners than I do. But his show was much less listenable than Biggs was. Usually he was at conventions or conferences at his hotel room, and he'd just start his recorder going, and he would present a story or what he had been writing, you know, pieces of his work in progress, because his fans responded to that. His fans ate it up. It created a connection between him and his fans that I admire. And even though I couldn't get past the terrible, terrible sound quality, where, you know, he'd be reading a story and I couldn't understand what he was saying, there were so many people that didn't care. They heard these excerpts from the story that he was writing, and they couldn't wait to buy it, to have it in their hands in a finished product. And that is so cool. And I would love to have that with you. You know, I've gone back and forth on this show over whether I would like this show to have a mass appeal or whether I would rather have just one or two listeners and be able to completely speak my mind, knowing that those listeners were friends and that it was a safe place. We're all friends here. There have been a couple episodes that I've shelved, that I've just kept on the shelf because, well, one of them, I don't want to edit. Because I'm a little afraid of how raw it's going to be and how, you know, too personal it might be. But then, yeah, at the same time, I was just like, oh gosh, should I share this with strangers, essentially? Because I don't have a lot of friends, guys. Let's see, who was it? Tom Tancredi sent me an email, and he gave, like, the definition of, like, a true friend. And he said, I don't know about you, but I could count the number of my true friends on a lumberjack's hand. And I found that to be just a very folksy, evocative image in my mind, that lumberjack's hand, you know, he's not going to have a buttload of fingers. And yeah, that's how I am with my friends, but I don't think any of them listen to my podcast. Big Anklevich is my podcasting partner, and so he listens to all the Doonstiefs, obviously, or he's there in the room. But this is a different animal, this outcast. So if you're listening, thank you.
I think about that day. I left him at a Greyhound station west of Santa Fe. We were 17, but he was sweet, and it was true. Still, I did what I had to do.
This weekend was the annual writers' conference that I go to, and it's just down the street. I don't have to find a hotel. I don't have to fill up the tank with gas, even. Don't have to pay for parking. I mean, one day I'm not going to be able to go, or I'm going to be dead, or in prison or something like that, and I will my mind will reel at how easy that was. You know, it's like a plethora of good things. This is the third year in a row that I've gone, and the Rish Outcast was already going when I started, so I'm sure I did an episode about it. I know I did an episode about last year's. I think it was called I Can Try That or I Can Do That. This year I went to as many panels as I possibly could. I was tired. Because, see, I have to still make money. And so I got up early in the morning, went to the very first panel, and I stayed, you know, as long as I could. But then when I came home, I had to work. I work from home now, so I'm my own boss, but I still had to do it. And that first night I stayed up till, I want to say it was, well, it was definitely after 2. I want to say it was after 3. I had set my alarm for the next morning to go to the conference. And in the back of my mind, I thought, you know, I'm going to be too tired to go. So, you know, I'm just going to look over these first couple of panels that I was going to go to and determine how important they are. And there were things that I wanted to get out of those panels that were early in the morning. But I resigned myself to the fact that, you know, I know myself. I'm not a morning person, and I'm tired. And at this point, by the time I set my alarm, it was 3. And so I went to sleep, and the alarm went off, and I got up. And in the back of my mind, it's like, hey, you can push snooze. But I didn't do it. I forced myself to go to the panels. And again, I hate to look a gift horse in the mouth, but most of the panels weren't great. Most of them were reiterations of things that I had already heard, or it was just people talking about their life experiences and stuff. I went to a panel called Creating Creatures and Characters, or something like that. And I thought it was going to be instructional of, okay, look, you're trying to make an alien, and you want it to be different. But why don't you take 2 or 3 animals, like a cobra and an eagle and a wombat, and take aspects from all 3 and put them into this being so that it will be something that the reader can envision because they have a context, but it also is not just a lizard man, you know? And I thought it would be stuff like that, or you know, characters. Let's come up with something that's interesting about characters. And all it was a guy who was very talented doing a slideshow presentation of the characters that he had created for comic books and for his own writing and for other people's books where he'd done illustrations. That helped me not at all, in the slightest. And I'm trying to think. There was another panel where I didn't understand. I thought it was sort of going to be like a story creation panel, whereas, you know, like we're all going to come up with the end of the world and elements and things like that. But what it turned out to be was a game, like a parlor game. There were people on the panel, panelists, that participated in the game. And, you know, it was amusing. But even at the time, while it was going on, I realized, you know, I should have gone to a different panel, or just gone somewhere and sat down in a chair and written for that hour. There was another one about abnormal psychology, and I thought that they were going to talk a little bit about how the brain works and how somebody might not function like other people, or how psychopathy works, kind of thing like that. I thought that that would be useful. But what it ended up being was about how people with OCD live, how people with manic depression, how they function or don't function. And it was a bunch of panelists who had experience with these. Like, one of them was a psychologist. One of them is, you know, he's got some kind of disorder where he harms himself, and one of them has a bunch of kids that have mental issues, and they just talked about their experiences. It was interesting, certainly. And maybe it was educational because you know, I had not heard a lot of these things, and they complained a lot about how OCD is depicted in the movies or television thing, that sort of stuff. But it didn't help me in my writing. It was another one of those panels where it's like, oh, I should have gone to a different one. But like the one that I complained about last year, that was, you know, romance with non-human, inhuman romance or whatever it was, where I thought it was going to be like, you know, dealing with, you know, like Big has been writing this book about a boy who falls in love with a fairy, and the fairy chooses to leave her fairy world and come and live as a human. And that turns out to be a mistake. He really ought to pay me to write the back of his book covers. And so I thought it was going to be something about that. But what it turned out to be was about romance writing, writing romances, where it's not a man falling in love with a woman, but a man falling in love with a centaur, a woman falling in love with a Bigfoot, that kind of stuff. It was romance novels with inhuman love interest, right? Maybe that's what it was. I don't know. I don't care anymore. The fact that I'm still beating this dead horse either means that I find it funny still, or that I need to go to one of those mental issues panels and change. They did something interesting this year where it was, they had different tracks, let's say. You know what I mean? Like there would be a writing track, there would be a editing track, there would be a film track, an art, like drawing, that kind of art track. And then there was a health track, which I guess they had never done before, but there had been lots of pressure. And the mental one was about, it was called Abnormal Psychology, and it was on the health track too. And I didn't realize that. I never knew. There was never any designator. In fact, I probably ought to email them and say, hey, next year, please let us know what track each one is on. Just so that people say, hey, I'm going to go to a bunch of these wellness tracks or whatever. They will know. But it's mostly so that I don't accidentally go to something thinking that it's about one thing and it turns out to be about another.
Summer Sunday night, we'd sink into our seats right as they dimmed out all the lights. The Technicolor world made out of music and machine, it called me to be on that screen.
I may have complained a bit about the panels, just as an example, but for the most part, it was a panel about people talking about a particular subject. They all are experienced. They all have success, different levels of success. And you can learn things about people who are successful. You can learn things about people that are making it happen. And of course, there's no trick. There's no one answer that's going to light up the world and make you say, now I can do it. Part of the time, it's interesting to see the writers argue about how to write. Strangely, you know, I've discovered that pantsers versus planners, or outliners versus discoverers, I think is what they call it, that they're really, really passionate about their process. And they like to argue about whether it's better to be a pantser or a planner. And that's fine, I guess. Maybe it's just because you've been told so many times that you have to do it this way. And so because you do it a different way and it works for you, you want to argue with that have to be mentality. But yeah, they all have different philosophies of how to make it work. And maybe not philosophies is, maybe that's not a good word. It just experiences. There was one lady who talked about, you know, I get up and in the morning and I do the things that I need to do, but 12 o'clock noon is my writing time. I sit down at 12 o'clock and I start to write, and I write for as long as I have to. Sometimes I just write until 12 to 6. Sometimes I write only until 3. There are times though that I write until 3:30 in the morning. that's her ritual, whatever you want to call it. And then there are other people. There's one guy who I've seen on several panels, and he gets up at 5 o'clock in the morning and writes until 8 o'clock in the morning, and then it's time to leave for work. He's making it happen. One of the panels that I enjoyed was one about angst, about getting over being critical of yourself, of being depressed, I guess, about, you know, being an artist. And the thing that was interesting about that is I'd say that there were about 40 attendees in that panel. And 5 of them, 6 counting me probably, were male. And I wondered about that, and I asked Big about it, what he thought. Because I figured, okay, well, women are more sensitive. Women have the tendency to get down on themselves. I mean, maybe there's more criticism among women, you know? I don't know. Certainly, around here, there are ideas, old-fashioned ideas of what makes a successful woman, what makes a woman a complete woman, and that can be damaging to the psyche to be told that if you're not doing A, B, and C, then you're not a true woman, then you have not fulfilled your full potential as your gender. That exists for guys as well, but not in the same way. Anyhow, I was surprised about the ratio, and when I mentioned it to Big, he said, you know why it was that way? And I said, why? And he said, because men don't write. Women are writers. And I thought that was interesting. I wouldn't say that the vast majority of people on panels were women, because I went to a few horror panels, and those tended to be men. I went to one about action, and those tended to be men. You know, there'd be like a token woman on the panel kind of thing. But as far as writing in general goes, it seems like women know where it's at. Women are where it's at. Women are what steak, it's what's for dinner. But this this panel that the lady gave about angst, it sounds like, you know, even though I've been down on myself for 30 years, maybe not that long, I don't know. You know, I never measure up. I'm never going to be the success that other people are. Other people have it way worse. Other people just sink into a bog of depression and self-loathing, and that sucks. And so I listened to her panel and I got a lot out of it. I enjoyed hearing her experiences. But here's another thing. You hear about the 1%. In America, 1% of the population owns 90% of the wealth. I think that's how it is. Maybe it's 95, I don't know. And they always talk about the 1%ers, you know. And I don't have wealth, but I recognize I've got it pretty good. I've got it easy compared to a lot of people. I was telling you about the panel with the mental issues, and the level of anxiety that you would have as the parent of these children, and they would talk about what goes on in these children's heads, or, you know, how difficult it is to get them out of from under the kitchen table or something like that. I've got it easy, guys, and I have more time in which I could write than most people, I think. And maybe not. Maybe everybody spends 3 or 4 hours a day watching television, and I don't. And so they too could write if they wanted to in those 3 hours. Not saying that I do write in those 3 hours, but I do write. And I do podcasts and I do audiobooks, and I'm trying. But I recognize that it's easier for me because I have so much fewer responsibilities and nagging voices and things clamoring for my attention and pressure on me. I got a little bit of money recently. I mean, not a lot, but there was some money that was given to me, and I was like, oh, okay, I'll deposit that. But I didn't run to the bank. Holy God, I got to be at the bank right now. It closes at 5. so that I can pay off all my bills so that, oh gosh, you know, the credit card is going to be that much closer to being paid off, or so that the past due notices will dry up. I just deposited the money when I felt like it, when I went to the bank. And nobody, not nobody, but most people don't have that kind of luxury. I guess what I'm saying is that right now it's really easy for me to work on my goals. And I still fail. There are times when I tell myself, okay, I'm going to do this and this, and I don't do either of them. But I have fewer excuses than you do, probably. So why would you be listening to this? Why not resent me? Yeah, you can. I welcome it. We all have our own pitfalls, and we all have our own weaknesses. And, well, yeah, flaws, I guess, is the word. And one of mine is definitely a lack of ambition. One of mine is definitely fear of failure. Fear of success sometimes, you know? People say something was really good, and I'm like, yeah, I think. Still, my challenges have to be easier to deal with than yours.
Without a nickel to my name, hopped a bus, here I came. Could be brave or just insane. We'll have to see, cause maybe in that sleepy town, he'll sit one day, the lights are down, he'll see my face and think of how he used to know me.
You know, they were talking on the panels about working hard, about making it happen for yourself, you know, creating your own success. That's what it was. And I, gosh, I'm sure there is a self-help book called Create Your Own Success or Make Your Own Success. And if not, feel free to write it, because I think that that would sell a million copies. One thing that they'd mention over and over again is that you just have to do it. You have to, there's a time when you have to put away the excuses and just do it if it's something that you want to do. There was a speaker, and after her speech, somebody did the Q&A, and what is your advice for somebody who wants to be a writer? And I had heard it a million times, but maybe this young person hadn't heard it. She said, well, first, see if you can be something else. If you can make a living doing something else, do that instead. Just write in your spare time. There's so many easier ways to make a living than being a writer. And I dug that. At another panel, somebody mentioned, well, how many times have you talked to somebody who say, oh yeah, I'd like to write a book. Yeah, someday when I find the time, I'm going to write a book too. As though it's that easy. And I was like, oh, you wrote a book? Yeah, I'm going to do that sometime too. Or I could do that. If they had the time. I think about that all the time. I think about being stuck somewhere, you know, breaking your legs or going to jail. I think about going to jail a lot. And how much writing would I get done in prison? And, you know, it's just like,
oh, hey, Jethro wants to make you his bitch.
It's like, oh, gosh, I'm right in the middle of a scene. Could you ask Jethro to give me 15 minutes?
Okay.
That sort of stuff. You have to do it if you want to do it.
I hear them every day. The rhythms in the canyons that will never fade away. The ballads in the ballrooms left by those who came before. They say you've got to want it more.
I told you, or I told someone, I think it might have been on a That Gets My Goat episode, that 2 years ago, the very first one of these that I went to, at the end of the conference, the last hour on Saturday night, I saw people hugging, and I saw a young girl, or, you know, 20-something woman crying that it was over. And I don't know that I was jealous of that in 2015, but in 2017, I am jealous of that. That you so look forward to the weekend, that's what you long to, oh my gosh, I can't wait. It's like, oh, well, it'll be another year before I see all these people that I love, or before I get into this environment that so energizes me, that so fills me with adrenaline and motivation and maybe sense of possibility. We went to the New Media Expo 2 years in a row, and then we never went again. And I regret that. That New Media Expo could have been one of those where it's the end, and I'm not going to get to see Marshall or Renee or Brian or Abby or Charlie Manson or any of those guys again for a year. And I'm just filled with, oh gosh, you know, this has been so great and now it's over until next year. Now, it should have been that way, but it isn't. We never did it again. But yeah, I definitely got that sensation, the feeling of these people are making it happen, and you know what? I can make it happen too. Going back to the people getting up early or doing whatever they do, you know, just this is what they've chosen to do. This is what they have decided they're going to do. There was a panel about whether you should be a part-time writer or a full-time writer. And this guy talked about they had saved up a little money. His wife had a good job and his job sucked and he wanted to be a writer. And they sat down and said, what if you quit your job and you tried to be a writer full-time for a year? We give it a year. And if there's some kind of improvement on your career and your attempts to be a successful writer, then we'll keep doing it. But if not, then you'll have to, you know, look for another job or maybe get your old job back. Or I don't know. I didn't take notes on where he used to work. So he has the year. And I don't know about you, but I think there would be times during that year when I would slack off or sleep in or do something fun. My cousin got an Xbox One for Valentine's Day. And this is going to seem really critical of my cousin. Don't take it this way. He's a good guy. He earns a lot of money. He's able to provide for his family. He makes enough money that his wife doesn't have to work. So that's a success, right? But he already plays so many video games with the Xbox 360 that he had that when I heard, oh, he got an Xbox One, I was just like, oh, no. But his aspirations, he's probably already reached them. You know, make enough money that my kids are taken care of, that there's always food on the table, that we pay the mortgage. The rest of the time when I'm not making that money is mine to do whatever I want. And that's great, but it's not my dream, you know. The pursuit of an artistic career or artistic endeavors, that's hard. And it's unlikely to succeed. That's something that they talk about, you know, making a living in the arts. There's some crazy number, some depressing number of actors, working actors in the world or in America or in Hollywood. And then you find out how many of them make enough money that they're above the poverty line. And yeah, there are the Tom Cruises and the Jennifer Lawrences, but there are so many more actors who barely make ends meet or have another job or have a spouse or parents or whatever it is that make ends meet for them, because the chances of making the kind of money, the chances of just breaking through and being successful enough that this is your living, I'm doing great, are so small that it's practically crippling to hear. And I guess that same stuff goes on even with self-publishing writers and stuff like that. Invariably, the people on the panels that we're talking about, their careers are doing better than I am. Invariably. I don't think there was a single person that's just like, well, I ain't never written no book yet, but I'm gonna. But almost invariably, I'm going to say, I'm not going to say without exception, but almost invariably, every one of them works harder on their craft than I do. That's what I think. The editor who gave her speech said that there are a few writers out there that are so good that they get a publisher and they get a career. But there are a lot more writers out there who get a publisher and get a career because they work hard. They're not as talented as the small percentage, but they work hard. And yeah, hearing that stuff, it's a little bit overwhelming, but it's also inspiring, encouraging. Why don't I work a little bit harder?
And someday as I sing the song, a small down kid will come along. That'll be the thing to push him on, and he'll know.
there's that very first song in La La Land where they're all on the Matrix freeway stuck in traffic, and they sing that song and they talk about, you know, she came from Santa Fe and left her boyfriend at the Greyhound station and came to LA, you know, to pursue her dream. And, you know, they're all so cheerful about it. Holy cow. They're all going to make it happen. They're all going to pursue their dreams. And at one point, these dread words, "You've just got to want it more," are sung. And that, my friends, is probably the answer. You may be more talented than me. You may be less talented than me. But if you want success more, if you want to write more, if you want to be a novelist more than I do, then you are going to succeed before I do. So right now you're saying, "Oh, Rish, don't be so hard on yourself. Holy cow, man, you are the most talented guy I know. Oh, your stories just move me and they reach me and they scare me. And oh, the Minnesota diarrhea ghost story that you wrote is perfect story." Okay, nobody's saying that. I know that one was just a joke. But it's like, "Oh my gosh, that joke was great." Well, first off, imposter syndrome. If you liked it that much, then I must not have written it. Or you're just saying that. Come on. Yeah, it's not true. And, you know, if you feel that way, if you really think my stuff is that good, there's the Patreon. Or, you know, if you don't have any money, feel free to send me a message, to email me or whatever, and one day maybe it'll come through. But I don't know that I'm that good. I don't know that my stories are that good. I want them to be. But, you know, Big has asked me on more than one occasion, "How is it that you can be so arrogant about your narration, about your audiobook skills, but you're so whatever the opposite of arrogant is when it comes to your writing skills?" I mean, it's a good question. Because, yeah, maybe I do come across as a little bit arrogant with narration. You know, I put in an audiobook that I got from the library, and I think, this guy's not so good. Oh, I would have done a better job on this, that kind of thing. But let's see if I can crystallize why I feel that way. Okay. The difference is, one is that you're an athlete, that you're a runner or, you know, a runner. It's easy to say, "Look, I can do this. I run very fast. You started the stopwatch. That's how fast I ran it in. I am a fast runner." That is quantifiable. That is observable. The other is a dancer. I'm a dancer. I try to express myself through dance, and I try to move people or move myself. And whether I'm successful in that, whether I move you, whether I reach you or not, is your opinion, is open to interpretation. It's arguable. And that's how I feel about my narration versus my writing. Look, I can do voices. And I can keep them straight. And I can have a character talking like this to another character who talks like this and answers just in a different way, in a different voice. Just automatically, I can do that, and there are other people that can't do that. That's quantifiable. But with my writing, it's something else. Did I create the image in your head that I had in my head? Did the dialogue feel natural or amusing or frightening or poetic or, you know, whatever I'm attempting with the dialogue? Do you like the characters or dislike the characters or feel suspense or humor? Or there's the imposter syndrome again. It's like, am I just ripping something off and I don't realize it? Am I not as good as, you know, so-and-so? Am I a dime store Stephanie Meyer? That was meant to be funny. I don't know that that is universal, that all creative people feel that way. Certainly, there were 35 to 40 people in the room with the angst lady who felt that way, and I felt sorry for the lady on the panel. She has it harder than me. She has a buttload of kids. And I wonder if that offends people when I use that phrase. I don't care, but I wonder if it offends people. She has just tons of children, and they're all between the ages of like 5 and 6 and a half or something like that. You know, just like whatever the most compact period of time you can have children in is. And once she started having this brood, her time to write became smaller and smaller, and she became more of a mommy, help, kind of person where, you know, there's constantly somebody pulling on her all the time. She didn't have time for herself, and then her husband would get home from work or whatever, and he would become another child. It was just like, geez, it's already been 3 months since you had another kid. Let's get to it. Come on. You know, that kind of stuff. And she dreamed about the time when her youngest would finally start going to school so that she would have, I don't know, 3 hours of peace when it could be her time. And she told herself as September got closer and it was his kindergarten time looming, that once he goes to school, oh, my dreams will be, I will finally find time for me and I can be who I was before and be a writer, and it's going to be glorious. And her husband said, I know you. You're going to fall apart once you have no kids in the house. You're going to start twitching like a meth addict at a Jimmy Buffett concert. I don't know. Her husband was not the writer, so, you know, whatever he said to her to insult her was not all that clever. But that's rain. It's raining. So I'll stop this recording in just a second, because that's a lot of noise for you to have to put up with. She's just like, you know, you'll see. It's like, all my misery is going to go away the second he starts school. So she took her son to his first day at kindergarten and dropped him off. And yeah, he wasn't like a clinger of just, no, mommy, stay with me or whatever. She said that he was thrilled to be there. And he's just like, oh, yeah, look at that chick. And I'm going to bang that one. And oh, yeah, this one's going to be my girlfriend. And that one's going to be my one on the side. And oh, I'm going to rule this school. Apparently, her kid was Big Anklevich as a 5-year-old. So she went back out to the car and then suddenly burst into tears so bad that she couldn't drive. She had to call her husband and through snot and lots of tears say, you were right. She was miserable once the kid was gone. And a part of me, oh my gosh, that just breaks my heart to hear that. But another part of me is just like, what the fuck? And again, I recognize that I probably sound like an asshole when I say these things. Sorry. Hey, she was there giving a panel on how you can deal with these things too. She was a likable lady, and I wish her all the success in the world. And if it comes down to me being a writer that people really love to read the writing of, and the money comes in enough where that's what I do for a living, and her being a writer, exactly the same kind of thing. You know, I hope that she gets it. Because she deserves it more. Not that she wants it more. Maybe she does. Maybe it's the difference between going to the Olympics and seeing some awesome gymnast and going to the Special Olympics and seeing somebody succeed there. Which, again, I realize may sound super asshole-y. But, you know, I can't win. Guys, I was trying to be empathetic to this lady, and I'm just not a very... Oh, I said I was going to shut this off so that you didn't have to hear the rain pour down. That's a good idea. I'll talk to you again in a minute when it's not pissing rain.
And even when the answer's no, or when my money's running low, the disc and mic and neon glow are all I need.
It occurred to me that maybe, in my own weird, small way, I am a role model, or at least a cautionary tale, for people out there. I mean, I am aware that there are people who are podcasters that would not have become podcasters, if not for us. But you got to do it. And that means sometimes doing it when you'd rather do something else. When that means being tired or missing out on something that would be fun, but is not leading you toward this goal that you have of being an artist. And listen, there's nothing wrong with creating art just for art's sake. A couple of years ago, a friend of mine, who shall remain nameless, had this idea. We had a president of the United States who did something controversial, bad. And he had an idea of writing a story that explained why the president had done that. That it was something that he didn't believe in, that he knew history would frown upon him for. But he knew more than we did. He had to do that. He had to sort of take one for the team, as it were, and know that he would be tarnishing his reputation, that he would be judged for this thing that he did forever. But it was more important to prevent this thing, to avert this disaster or whatever it was. Anyway, it was an interesting idea. It's not a story that I could have written. And yeah, there was so much anger over what this president did that it was, I mean, it was just a unique perspective. It was a clever idea. And my friend never wrote that story. Gosh, I feel like I'm being a butt by saying that, by throwing him under the bus. Let me put it this way. Right now, I have an idea in my head for a story that I think is really solid. And it's a horror sci-fi idea. I just, oh gosh, it seems to have so much potential. I really want to write it, and I want it to be good. I want it to be scary and kind of unique. I haven't started on it yet, even though I got the idea 2 weeks ago or more. I figure, you know, when I finish my current project, that will be the next one that I work on. And I haven't done that. I started a short story, which I should have been able to write in a single day, but I didn't, you know, to go along those lines of, I should have wanted it more. I should have just worked a little harder and it would be done and I could be starting on this project right now. But anyway, it's, in my opinion, a good idea for a story. It is the skeleton of a great story. But if I never write it, then it doesn't matter how great an idea it was. It was a waste of inspiration. It was a thanks but no thanks to my muse. And I hope by the time this episode airs, that story is done. Maybe even out there for you to buy. That would be grand. But that's not going to happen unless I make it happen. Big ends his show with, dreams don't come true, they are made true. Maybe I need to do that in episodes, you know, come up with some inspirational montage. He has this music and all these little quotes like, you know, live a why not life. I could fully see somebody listening to his show and getting something out of it and getting pumped and saying, I'm going to go to the gym, or I'm going to start my art project. I'm going to write that novel. As God is my witness, I will never go hungry again. Maybe I need something like that on my podcast. Maybe it's depressing to listen to my show. But today, I hope not. I hope you listen and you're like, yeah, you know, I can do it too. If Rish can do it, I can do it. Because I'm stronger than Rish. He was born without a backbone. If not for modern technology, he would be the human worm. And so I'm going to do it. I'm going to write that story. In fact, I'll put in the show notes a link to that story. See, that sounds like a promise. That sounds like I'm going to do that. Yeah, go over there and buy it. You can find out whether it was as good as it, whether the final product was as good as it is in my head. I thank you for listening to my show. If you are a Patreon donor, a subscriber, contributor, crony, whatever you want to call it, I doubly thank you. You are the bleeding wind beneath my wings. But you know, even if you never gave me a dime, if you never bought any of my stuff, I still appreciate you listening. This show is free. It's under a Creative Commons 3.0 non-commercial, no derivatives license, which means I can't sell it. And you can't sell it either, or, you know, change it. But you can just share it for free. And That's okay. I'm creatively fulfilled by talking to you, by talking to myself, and by trying to do more, by trying just a little bit harder to make it happen, to achieve my dreams, to be a writer, to be a successful audiobook narrator, to be a better me. I've just got to want it more. Good night.
I still recall that day. I left him at a Greyhound station east of Santa Fe.
I wish I knew the lyrics to that song. That would be a blast.
And even when the answer's no, or when my money's running low, the dish and mic and neon glow are all I need. And one day when this issue's gone, I'll see you when your clothes are on. We'll hop your car and drive it, and you'll go behind these hills. I'm reaching for the heights and chasing all the lights that shine. And when they let you down, you'll get up off the ground. As morning rolls around, and it's another day of sun.